Welcome to Wires X Digital Fusion Room, Kansas City wide. It is also connected to the YSF reflector, US-KCY, and to Echolink, W0FH-L. Visit our webpage at kansascityy.com or Facebook page, Kansas City Wide.
Well, good evening to everybody that has joined us on the Kansas City Wide System Fusion Network. This is going to be another special event net that we have. We've had several in the past, and this week and next week we're doing another, and we're going to focus on the history of ham radio in the Kansas City area, and also talk about the upcoming ham bash that'll be going on in a couple of weeks. My name is Brad. My call sign is Kilo Bravo Zero Lima Sierra Mike, and I'll be the host or the net control operator for this evening. How it's going to go is just like all the others. Our guest tonight, W0AIB Larry Staples, and I'll kind of have a conversation, maybe a little Q&A for the first half of the hour here, and then we'll open it up. We'll take some check-ins and give you guys a chance to ask Larry any questions that we may not have covered or just something that you would like to know. I'm going to let it drop. Something to keep in mind is these will be in 3-minute segments. All of our repeaters have 3-minute timeout timers, so we'll try not to go over that so we don't get cut off. Also, when it comes around to the check-ins and asking your questions, please just press the mic, wait about a second, and then start talking. Doing that this is and then letting it drop and then bringing it all back up just creates more delay upon delay within the network. So again, when we get to that point, just when you key your mic, wait about a second and a half, and then go ahead with your question, and I'll kind of play conductor and try to get everything networked. So with that, let's welcome Larry Staples, W0AIB. Larry, are you with us?
I think so. Let's see, was that KV0BSQ? Is that right, or did I get that wrong, Brian? It's W0AIB. How's the audio? Over.
Good to have you tonight, Larry. Your audio is just a little bit light. If you could speak up just a little bit more. Call sign is Kilo Bravo Zero Lima Sierra Mike. So I'll let you take it for a minute or so, and then we'll get started.
Okay, Brian, one of my pet peeves with some of these radios, some of these AC radios, is the audio levels do not seem to be the same for analog and for fusion. So you have to kind of adjust it to your mouth, and so I'll bring it up a little bit closer. And anyway, looking forward to this, to answering questions. I don't know that I have a lot. Well, maybe I do. Maybe I do have a lot to give to the folks, Brian. Go ahead.
Oh, I think you definitely do. Gosh, we could probably go for 2 or 3 hours, but we'll try to condense it down to an hour. I'll just start it off. Let's just go way back to the beginning. And how'd you get your start in ham radio? When? How? I know you've been doing it for over 6 decades now. So let's talk about the very beginning.
Well, the very beginning, I was born, right? Anyway, I think the first exposure I had to amateur radio was really shortwave listening, and I had an uncle here, and my grandfather lived here also. Grandfather was in Fairway, and the uncle was in an area just east of the plaza. And when I was a little tight, occasionally I'd go over to visit either one of them, and they both had shortwave receivers. I don't think they really appreciated what they had. My grandfather, as I remember it, had an Atwater Kent 206, which to a lot of shortwave listeners is kind of a famous radio. And then my uncle, they had a Philco. And these were both, the 206 is a cathedral radio, in other words, a table model, and so was the Philco, although the Philco did not have a round top to it, it was a flat top. And I used to listen to shortwave radio, and usually what I would do in the afternoon when I was visiting them, I would then fall asleep. That's kind of the first inkling that there was something outside of the Kansas City area.
Okay, and so I'm guessing that's what, post-World War II-ish, right around there?
Not necessarily. I was born in 1931, and if anybody wants to do the math, they'll find out that I was a little tyke during World War II, and the chances are very good that I was actually listening to shortwave radio towards the end of World War II. And I can particularly remember the Russian stations, of course they were broadcasting in English, and how we were referred to by them as capitalist warmongers. Over.
Well, I was going to say maybe that probably hasn't changed. But anyway, so we'll fast forward just a little bit. When did you first get licensed, or when did you get first introduced into amateur radio?
Well, the first thing was that my brother, who was 3.5 years older than I, during his 7th and 8th grade, he attended Western Military Academy in Alton, Illinois. And, of course, Alton is a lot closer to Chicago than we are. And so some of the other students were Chicago students, and one of them, that he knew pretty well, I guess, had an Allied radio catalog. Now, that was about looking at the Sears catalog or the Montgomery Ward catalog for the average person, for the radio person anyway, and they had all kinds of kits. You ordered a kit to put together for a radio, a broadcast receiver, and he got bored with it. He decided he didn't want to do it, so he brought it home uncompleted. And that started it. Then I got a hold of it and went ahead and finished the receiver and started to get very interested in radio. And later, because of listening to shortwave radio, I also heard some hams talking, and there were some ham radio operators in the neighborhood, which was Westwood Hills at that time. And there was one in Fairway. I cannot remember his call. I remember his son, though. And I remember the last name. The last name was Hilliard. Then there was another gentleman over on Rainbow Boulevard, not very far from Westwood Hills. And that was a fellow named Walt Klassen, K-L-A-S-S-E-N, Walt Klassen, who was a real estate, what am I trying to say, not director, developer. Far away, and he was, get this now, he was W0EIB, Whiskey Zero Echo, India Bravo. And lo and behold, when I got my license, I had AIB. What a coincidence. Over.
Oh, that really is. And for folks that have just tuned in, you're listening to the Kansas City-wide network of System Fusion repeaters. We're having an evening with Larry Staples, W0AIB, and we're going to talk about kind of all things ham radio, Kansas City-wide, the history. And Larry's now telling us how he first got interested and when he first got licensed, which I believe was about 1960. Is that right, Larry?
Oh, you're on the mark. What a phenomenal surprise. Yeah, what had happened on the licensing, let's touch that a minute. At that time, by the time I got really interested enough in ham radio to pursue a license, I was married, and I was 29 years old, I guess. A group of duplexes, a development where the Alameda Plaza Hotel or the International, what do they call that thing now, the big one down in the plaza? At any rate, that development was where the hotel is now. They had to tear all those down to develop stuff. But at any rate, we lived in one of those, and then the landlady, the person that ran that development and managed it was a woman. Her husband was W0. Oh boy, this is terrible. By the way, all the calls were WSN. At any rate. Anyway, back then you could get a technician license or you could get a novice license too. I decided to go after the technician license. But you had to know 5 words a minute in the code, and then you passed a technical examination, which happened to be the same examination for a general. But the technician license at that time could be given by a Class A, that's the equivalent of extra today, a Class A license holder. And since my landlady's husband was a Class A license holder, then he gave me the exam for the technician license, and sure enough, I passed it, and sure enough, the following January, which is only a few months off, I got issued W0AIP.
So now, back then, like now we have the VEs, the volunteer exam folks, and the coordinators, and whether it's the ARRL or the WY5I, did that not exist back then? When did that come about?
You're right, it did not exist then, and when did that come about? Boy, when you get to be my age, the time seems to fly, but it seems like it might have been 20 years ago or so, maybe 25 years ago, that they put in the volunteer examiner program. But then, back in those days, any Class A license holder or later extra class license holder could examine somebody and turn in the paperwork, and there wasn't any kind of a formality to it. We didn't have an organization of volunteer examiners then. It was just a bunch of guys. Walter, my friend Walter, that was my the first name of my guide and my mentor, and he just decided to do it, and so he did it. He gave the license tests, and then he filled out a form, sent all that stuff in, and my license came. That's all I can recall of that. By the way, a side note, he had a... and if there are any on, there might be some on frequency. He had an amplifier. He was running a Hallicrafter's HT44 transmitter. And then he had a linear amplifier, which I think ran a single 304TL, which was a big glass tube that would do 1,000 watts. And Walter was kind of a character. He also used a Variac in order to regulate the power output, and he had a 1,000-watt light bulb in the upper reaches of his basement, and he could take that Variac and modify, run the wheel up and down, and change the brightness of that bulb, and that's how he used to tune up his rig. It was the darndest thing you ever saw. Over.
I've heard of people doing that. I've never seen it or experienced it, but I've also, heard that with the amps and the tubes and all that, you didn't need a heater in your shack. But so you've got that. How were the clubs and things back in the Kansas City area at that time? Was there kind of an organized ham movement, I'll call it, or an organization, or was everybody kind of just out on their own?
Excellent question. There were several clubs in the Kansas City area. Some are still in existence. Heart of America Radio Club, which is said to be the oldest amateur radio club west of the Mississippi, and I'll bet you that's true, was probably the kingpin club of the city, and they actually published for a while a directory of all the hams in the area. There was a Jayhawk Amateur Radio Society, and if you look at those letters, that spells JARS, J-A-R-S, And there was also the Johnson County Radio Amateur Club. Then there was also, I can't forget this one, the Technician Club in Kansas City. Mind you, there's a load of discrimination going on. The fellows that had the general class license discriminated against we technicians, we lowly technicians. We only had to pass five words a minute, you see. And so we were kind of almost excluded from some of the other clubs. And there was a Kansas City VHF club, and then 2 years after, or 2 years or 1 year after getting my license, I was elected president of the club, and as such, I went ahead and joined the others. I can't recall whether the Santa Fe Club was in existence or Southside at that time, but JARS and the Heart of America Club definitely were. Later, of course, I went ahead and joined the officially joined the Heart of America Radio Club, when finally they decided that the technicians were great in number and also in all very good in technological achievements also. And so they started smiling on us a little bit and let us in. So I became a member of the Heart of America Radio Club. And let's see, what else? As far as organizations are concerned, let me let this drop, and then I got something else to say too, of course, over. Let's see if I got it. Yes, this is W0AIB, William Zero Adam, Ida Baker. Or if you like today's phonetics, it's Whiskey Zero Alpha India Bravo, Larry, and I live in, actually right now in Overland Park in a retirement home. One comment I wanted to make, I got very interested in public service. That became the biggest thing in my ham radio career. Some people are interested in working DX, and that's fine. I just never was really attracted to talking to distant stations. It didn't really turn me on much. I like the ham radio where you got an opportunity to meet other hams, and you're all working in a concerted effort to accomplish a particular objective, such as raising money for various charitable worthwhile organizations. Let me let this drop again. It was not long after I got involved with the Kansas City VHF Club. By the way, that club is no longer in existence. We finally had to, we put it to sleep a few years ago. But one of the guys, one of the members of the VHF club said, gee whiz, wouldn't it be nice if we could play a Santa Claus somehow for the Higginsville school. Higginsville, Missouri had a school for handicapped children, most of whom were not physically handicapped. Some were, but most of them were mentally handicapped. And so the guys organized a situation where we would have, there were five cottages that housed the residents in Higginsville, and these were single-level, flat brick buildings, rather attractive, actually, as a matter of fact. So we put a guy inside the place, just inside the door, with a radio, and then we'd have a fella in his car outside. Now, that was a pair for each one of these five cottages. And the guy on the outside played Santa Claus. The guy on the inside interviewed the various residents of that particular facility, and they could talk to Santa Claus and ask Santa Claus for stuff. Anyway, the thing that was interesting was that the Higginsville organization loved it. They loved it, and it worked out so well, and kids looked forward to it each year. Well, of course, we only did that for about 5 years. But that got me hooked. Just let it drop. W0AIV. And so, from then on, I got more and more involved with public service activities and worked with the March of Dimes for 33 years. That was, March of Dimes had walks and runs. The first walks, by the way, folks, were 20 miles. And if you haven't been walking and you decide to show up and walk 20 miles, you're in for a big surprise. We had a lot of people that just simply couldn't hack it after about 4 or 5 miles, and we'd have to go get them. We'd have to send out a vehicle to bring them back because their feet hurt so bad. At any rate, then on multiple sclerosis, oh boy, MS-150, which is a 150-mile bike run, down to Sedalia, Missouri, and back. And that was, I worked with that, oh, I don't know, for a bunch of years. I'd say 20 at least, maybe 25 even, but not as many as the March of Dimes. And then there was the American Diabetes Association was famous for their Wheel to Weston. And that was a bicycle run from Kansas City to Weston, Missouri. And in Weston, Missouri, they had a lady that ran a very, very fine restaurant, and still does, what I'm told. And she would organize and arrange for a great big picnic for all the bike riders because they'd get there about noon, so the timing was great. And put on quite a feast. A lot of social involvement with those kinds of activities. I can just keep talking forever. Is that what I should do, Brian, over?
Oh, no, that's definitely a good synopsis. I'll let everybody know what we're doing here. If you've tuned into the Kansas City-wide System Fusion Network, we have a special guest tonight, W0AIB, Larry Staples, and we're just having a conversation with him here in a little bit. We'll open it up for some check-ins and some questions. Before we get into the Larry's List stuff, so back then doing probably one of the first Santa Nets, which has become quite popular, I'm curious, was it primarily like 6 meter, probably what, AM, or maybe even sideband, or at that time were the repeaters starting to come out, the VHF repeaters? Was that coming on the scene in the area around that same time?
Oh, am I glad you're here. Thank you very much for reminding me. Practically all of the activity, particularly the public service activity in those years, early in the 60s and early 70s, I'd say, were 6 meter AM. You're right. By the way, one of the activities we ran back then, too, was we did the communications for the American Royal Parade, which then was handled, it was in downtown Kansas City. And I remember being the net control station for one of those. And now I think it's run by Johnson County Radio Amateur Club, and located, I think they locate that primarily in the Pershing Road area of down in Kansas City, in front of the big hotels. Yeah, 6 meters, and then I can't remember exactly when 2 meters came in, but 2 meters did come in, and it was all crystal controlled at first, and we had a limited number of repeaters. There were some. The big repeater then was 3494, 146.34 input, 146.94 output. And of course, you set your receiver on 146.94. There were no subaudible tones necessary at the time. And there were several other repeaters, but I don't think there were more than about a half a dozen in the Kansas City area. But 94 was definitely the most active one. And that was the Mid-America FM Association, which was headed up and managed by W0AT, a fellow named Bob Atkinson, who was also an engineer for the FCC. By the way, folks, in order to get an extra class license, you had to take an exam in front of an FCC engineer. Over.
This is KB0LSM, net control for this evening on the Kansas City-wide area network of System Fusion repeaters. We're talking with Larry Staples, W0AIB, this evening. And Larry, one of the things I've noticed, I live north of the city, but I work down in downtown Kansas City, and I've noticed there's kind of a lot of different clubs, but they all seem to kind of work together, get along, I guess it might be a better word, or, you know, they come together for, like what you were saying, for some of these public service events. Has that always been the case, or how has that kind of evolved over the years?
Excellent question. Thank you. Thank you very much. Kansas City has built on that reputation of clubs working together. This is in stark contrast to some places, some of the cities not far from Kansas City, as a matter of fact, who are cliquish and they kind of stick to themselves. We have a little bit of that here in Kansas City, but by and large, when there's a big activity that needs to be undertaken, such as the World War I Museum activities, my goodness, what a success that's been. And you'll usually have one club that sort of sponsors it and helps with the arrangements, but you'll have members of other clubs that fill in to furnish the operators necessary. That could be a whole session unto itself, as a matter of fact. And because we have present in Kansas City, a couple of the fellows that have actually run that activity at World War I Museum. But the clubs have gotten along pretty well, always have. And in fact, the regional public service activities were not sponsored by a specific club. I was asked to head up the March of Dimes, and I didn't think it had anything to do with it. Not that it didn't have something to do with VHF Club, but I pursued everybody, tried to get everybody, and that, of course, later became the genesis for Larry's List, as a matter of fact. Over.
Well, Larry, you just brought me right into my next question, because that was kind of how I understood the history of Larry's List, was out of your love for doing public service events or coordinating those events, you were trying to come up with a way to probably make your life a little easier, or actually disseminate the information to the masses. And have I got that right? Is that really how Larry's List came about?
Yeah, we had to recruit help, you know. It requires, depends upon the size of the operation, but a big walk, a big 20-mile walk like the March of Dimes, we would need 20, 25 hams. Where are they going to come from? And so, and noticing that people were starting to use bulletin board systems with their computer, we started up Larry's List. And wasn't called that originally, of course, but and that's what it was for. First thing we did was recruit people for public service activities, and then there was a request. Hold on to the ads, folks. There was a request that we also publicize obituaries, and so that was the second objective for Larry's List. And then after that, it kind of evolved into almost any subjects, and then sales of equipment and so on and so forth. And I think that was about 25 years ago. I really don't remember.
Now, on the Larry's List, did you ever vision that it would become? I know it probably was designed initially just to be local or to cover, you know, the Kansas City metro area. Then it became regional, and I would almost even say it's maybe even national or international now. I'm not sure on those subscribers, but back then when you were getting it started, did you have the design to make it bigger, or was it just something that really kind of caught on and you liked to do it?
Well, it grew by itself. No, there was no objective. We weren't trying to prove anything. We finally exceeded 2,000 subscribers, which is way beyond what we ever imagined. but it kept going and going, and then of course for many years I handled all the stuff myself, and I had to read every one of the messages that people wanted to publish, and then I would transmit that to a server operated by K0JPR. Hold on, folks, just a minute.
Well, it's at the bottom of the hour. I'll just take this minute here when Larry, it might have been a phone call, I'm not sure. Like I said, it's 7:30 here in the Kansas City-wide System Fusion Network, and we're talking with Larry Staples, W0AIB, kind of a little bit going back into history about the history of ham radio in the Kansas City area, some history about some of the clubs and things like that. We're going to go for just a little bit longer, then we'll open it up and take some check-ins, and you guys can ask Larry some questions. My name is Brad. My call sign is Kilo Bravo Zero Lima Sierra Mike. I'm your host or your net control operator for this evening, and let's see if Larry's made it back. W0AIB, Larry, are you still there? Well, while we're waiting for Larry to come back, let's go ahead and take some check-ins. Do we have some stations out there that would like to ask Larry a question when he comes back? Please call now.
Excuse me, folks. I'm back now. Unexpected phone call. Have I got it?
Yep, you got it. Glad you came back. Where we left off, you were kind of talking about how Larry's list has grown, how you did it. I'm kind of going to segue over to kind of when I first met you, honestly, in our very first conversation. When I sat to take my extra exam, it was a class that was put on by Ted and Norma over at the Independence Fire Station, I believe. And you came in and, I'm going to say, kind of gave a motivational talk, basically, and asked us some questions and kind of reminisced a little bit or whatever. When or how did you start doing that, or was there any reason behind it?
Let's see. Yeah, Ted and Norma's classes and when I used to give the talks. They asked me to do that several years ago, and the reason I was doing it, and particularly when the people that were had studied for their technician license, in other words, they were going to become hams for the first time. And the idea was is to try to give them an idea of what they got themselves in for. In other words, all of the stuff that's available kind of in ham radio, some of the things it did to me. I know I remember one time when I explained how ham radio may have saved my life, which is maybe a bit of a stretch, but some truth to that, actually. To give them an idea of the possibilities, and ham radio wasn't just for talking to other people, it was also to get to know them, and which can become an incredibly important part of an individual's life, such as it has for me, over.
Well, and that also brings us into another topic I kind of wanted to break up, because the one thing I remember that you said at that talk that you gave us, or whatever you want to call it, and it stuck with me ever since, you said, it's not your father's ham radio anymore. I may have paraphrase that or whatever, but that was a quote that I attributed to you, and you were talking about how things were changing. And so what do you think has been some of the biggest changes, for the better or for the worse, that you've seen in your career, your time in ham radio?
This is W0AIB. Well, biggest changes. The basics are pretty much the same. The methods of transmission are different, such as what we're on right now. We're on digital fusion. And, of course, there wasn't such a thing. There wasn't even any single sideband when I first got on the air. And, of course, it took over HF HF world pretty rapidly once it got established. Digital is a little more difficult to get established, for one reason, the radios can get kind of expensive for digital, and so I'd say that's the biggest change. There's so much technology involved too, and that has changed it. I've got an advanced class license, and I got it a long time ago, about 1963, I think, or 64 or something like that, and I never advanced beyond the advanced. It's not as far up the scale as the extra class is, but it's pretty close. We've got almost as many band privileges as the extra class does. So that hasn't changed very much. But what I'm trying to make is I've been kind of slow to adopt some of the newer techniques of ham radio. For example, well, right now on Fusion here, on Fusion, it's possible for us to get a break-in for somebody across the world, someplace else in the world, and that also has a Fusion station. He can get into our Kansas City wide room, and conversely, if you're properly equipped on this end, you can also, and if you know the address of another system in another part of the world, you can get into theirs and talk to them too. You can do the same thing with Echolink, which is a little easier to use, and 145.13 repeater, which is extremely popular on analog in the area, has Echolink capabilities, and it's a pretty good service too. That's part of it. I kind of danced around a little bit, and I apologize for that.
Oh, not at all. In fact, that's a great segue over to one of the reasons why we're having these special event nets is that 1-3 repeater reminds me of, I think there's a ham bash coming up in a couple of weeks, and I understand there's kind of some history behind that, and it's one of two of the big ones in there. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of the ham bash or the ham fests in the Kansas City area?
Oh, yes. This is W0AIB, Whiskey Zero Alpha, India Bravo. Yes, I certainly can. The ham bash itself was started by the 3494 Club. Not a club, really. It was just a group of guys that ran it. They had about seven or eight fellows on that committee. And that's the Mid-America FM Association was the name of it. And then later in its life, I was appointed to it also. And that club then, in cooperation with the National Guard Armory over on the Missouri side of the line, 50th and I-435, or it's not too far away from the Shrine facility, was the old National Guard Armory, and we held the ham bash in there and called it a ham bash. And then after a while, that group, such as many groups, finally dissolved, and guys get old, and if they don't replace themselves, then quite often an organization will kind of slack off, and it did, and the Shrine Club stepped in to take it over, which of course was an absolutely magnificent group to take it on. And with Jet Hallberg, K0TCB, now remember folks, a week from tonight, right here, Jet will be doing his thing too and talking about the ham bash. But it's pretty much the same today as it was then. It was a smaller deal when it was at the National Guard Armory, a smaller facility, and but we did the same thing. People had their old equipment that they're trying to sell and spread it out on tables, and had that kind of an activity. Also had a drawing for there'd be one or two big prizes to give away, usually a new radio, and I think one year I even won one. I believe so. And I know a couple of my friends did, and it just morphed in. Like I said, morphed right into the Shriner deal, and you can't say enough good things about Chet and how Chet has stepped in and really taken ownership of that thing over the past few years. And then recently he's had some health challenges. I say challenges because he seems to be handling quite nicely, and he's had some help come in. And Larry Vanello, KC0FD, Kilowatt Charlie Zero Foxtrot Delta, and by the way, he's a retired.
Well, Larry, you timed out the repeater there. You were telling us about the other Larry. Last part of his call, FD. I believe he's a retired firefighter. Go ahead, pick it back up from there.
This is WZIB. Yeah, Larry Ganello is quite the guy. He's a reasonably healthy gentleman. I'm saying that because he's how do I say round gently and with style and grace? I guess there's no way to say it. Anyway, you'll notice Larry maybe following Chester, maybe not, working separately with him, but anyway, when you go to the ham bash, and I presume that every single person that's listening to this is going to go to the ham bash. Over.
I met Larry with Chet at the Raytown Ham Fest earlier this spring, and you're going to get me in trouble. So I tell you what, at this point, we're at about almost a quarter till the hour, and you want to take some questions for some folks that are out there listening. If that's okay with you, I'll take a few check-ins, and then we'll get a few questions from them. This is KB0LSM, your net control host for this evening on the Kansas City Wide Network. We've got a special guest, W0AIB, Larry Staples. He's been talking to us about the history of ham radio, the ham bash that's coming up, and Larry's list, of course. So if anybody's got any questions out there, let's take a few check-ins. I'll acknowledge you, and then I'll come back to you for your questions. So if anybody wants to ask Larry anything, please call now.
Now.
W0DRN Dennis in Prairie Village.
K0ION Glenn in Chillicothe.
K0RGB Russ in Smithville.
Okay, we've got three there, and we'll cut it off for that right now, and we'll see how we're doing on time after we get back to those guys. So W0DRN, you're the first one up. What's your question for Larry?
Yeah, Larry, this is W0DRN. I was just wondering, when the clubs first started getting going back in the 60s, how much did they do that was actually on repeaters compared to how much traffic were they conducting through simplex frequencies only?
Hi, Dennis. Good to hear you. That's a good question, and I'm trying to search my mind. The repeaters were fairly new at the time, but they were getting real popular real fast. And so a lot of the transmission on 2 meters was on the repeaters. Of course, there's always people that will work direct occasionally. But what I did most of the time, like a lot of people do now, is just simply monitor a single repeater and enter into the conversations. I don't know that answers your question, though. Go ahead.
Yeah, Larry, it does. I was just wondering, I know the number of repeaters available back in the early days wasn't near what we have now, and I didn't know if anybody used simplex or the, you know, like the national simplex 146.520, the national calling frequency. Did the simplex frequencies get used not much in the early days?
Actually, as a matter of fact, they did, but and one thing that you do before you went on a trip, you'd look up in one of the databases, you'd look up the repeaters that were on, that would be on your route, whatever trip you were taking, and you would tune your mobile rig in to cover those particular frequencies so that you could talk to stations all the way on your trip. That was very popular. It's a little more difficult now because of digital, like Fusion and DMR and D-Star protocols entering into the scene. But still there's an awful lot of 2-meter analog, and that's would be what you would program into your repeater, but into your rig before you went on the trip. I'm getting tongue-tied.
Well, thank you, Larry. I'll let somebody else have another chance. And by the way, your radio sounds good tonight. I think your audio is sounding good. So I'll let somebody else ask you something. This is W0DR from Bethlehem.
All right. Thanks, Dennis. That was a great question. Next one on the list is Glenn, K0ION. Go ahead, Glenn.
Larry, K0ION, Glenn in Chillicothe, a new call sign, and I want to thank you for the service that you've done. Well, we still do a lot of analog machines up here. You could ask Brad that, going eastward or southward out of Chillicothe, you're probably going to run all analog machines, so just consult repeater book and poke them into memory and dial down the memory as you travel. I want to ask you about a club. And from what I understand, I never was a dues-paying member. It was primarily a Northland club, PhD. Chuck, and I can't remember his call, operated it or ramrodded it. But at one time, I think it had close to 700 members. But one of the neat things I experienced with the club, and I didn't subscribe to it, is once one received their license, within weeks or maybe a month or so of receiving your license, you actually got a newsletter. It was kind of crudely printed, but they mailed it out free of charge, and it was always a good resource and something to look forward to each month. But I think even for a while, they hosted a ham fest there in the Northland, maybe up at Business Park there off of Front Street. But Larry, can you help me out there? Over to you.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you for bringing that up. Because an awful lot of credit needs to be given to Chuck Miller. That's L.C. Miller, Chuck Miller, W-A-0-K-U-H, if you recall. And was the power behind the PhD Club. And I may be one of the few people alive today that can tell you that PhD stood for Poduck Happy Dunkers. Let me repeat that slowly. Podunk Happy Dunkers was the name of their organization. And Chuck was a ball of fire. It's very difficult to figure out how he got it all done, but the newsletter, he put a little fire in the back ends of some of the members and got them to do an awful lot of the work, and they had a directory that they put out every year of the Kansas City area hams. By the way, it is estimated that there were about 5,000 hams in the Kansas City area, and I can't remember, the directory had about 2,000, I believe, 3,000, something like that. And it was incredibly valuable. I may have a couple of them around here, as a matter of fact, probably do, but Chuck also ramrodded the, let me let this drop. He ramrodded their ham bash, or at one time it was held in one of the buildings down at what's now the Charlie Wheeler Airport, which used to be the old municipal airport. And he also one time had it in Bartle Hall. That was a little more expensive to rent that place, but he got all that done. Amazing guy. But of course, like as if with anything else, when the leader finally has to go away, then it dropped off to oblivion, and I don't remember exactly how many years ago that was. Over.
Yeah, I'm not certain either. Bartle Hall, that would be quite the undertaking, but yeah, I remember probably one of the last ham fests they had was down at Business Park, there off of our Executive Park, there off of Front Street 435. So, thank you, Larry, and I'll turn it back to Brad. KB0LSM, K0ION, and I'm out.
Okay, Glenn, thank you very much, and That was a good question. I'd actually forgot about that, too. I was looking back through my notes here, and I skipped over it. The next person that's had a question for Larry is Russ over in Smithville, K0RGB. Go ahead.
Oh, hang on a minute.
Well, good evening, and this is Russ in Smithville, and Larry, I wanted to start off by saying I appreciate everything that you've done. You're a noteworthy character, so thank you. And my question is there a single event as far as a tornado? Can you identify the worst tornado event that you've been involved with here in the Kansas City area?
Oh boy. First of all, a comment to ION. Congratulations on getting your ham license, and welcome to the wonderful world of amateur radio. And now the tornadoes. Well, of course, the biggest tornado that I can remember, in fact, I remember it rather clearly, I was not involved in the ham radio side of it, though. I was an employee at the time of the Marley Company, which had its offices at 222 West Gregory, and one of the guys in that department had a house that was virtually, as they were describing it on the radio, was virtually in line for the tornado, the 1957 tornado and Ruskin Heights tornado. And fortunately, the tornado didn't miss him, but man, you talk about nervous. He was looking out the window, and you could see the thing over in the southwest part. But it missed him, but that was damaging. And there was an amateur radio organization involved with it, but I do not know. I can't tell you any more than that. I just know there was one. Let me let it drop. Another comment right now, there are several organizations around the Kansas City area that are involved with storm spotting and weather reporting, and one of them, I live in Overland Park, by the way, folks, at 123rd and Knoll, very close there, and so I'm in Kansas. There is a group headquartered in Olathe, HAMS, and it's the Johnson County Emergency Communication Service, Johnson County ECS, they're called, and they have a very formalized organization, and I don't know how many members they have. It wouldn't surprise me if they're up to 100 or so, and they have regular spotting directions, assignments, that's the term, assignment spots around the county that would be particularly good for viewing tornadoes. And they have individuals assigned to those, so then when somebody sends out the alarm, then all of them dispatch from their homes and run out to man the various spots that have been pre-located. But other organizations are involved, too. I know there's one in the north of the river. I think there's two, as a matter of fact, one over on the Platte County side and one on the Clay County side. Let me let it drop. And there are groups on the east side, and that work with Jackson County, work with City of Independence, and also with Raytown. I do not know the current status of them. And there is a repeater station out in Lee Summit that works with the Skywarn group. Skywarn is an organization set up by the National Weather Service formalizing that, and it used to be much more formal around here than it is currently. And I'm not sure who's in charge of those organizations. I wish I knew more. Go ahead, Rick.
Okay, Russ, thank you for that question, and Larry, always just a wealth of information. We've got about 4 minutes left here, and hopefully everybody that's been listening is going to come to the Ham Bash. I understand Larry's List is going to have a table there. You might even have yellow hat on maybe at the table, so they'll be easy to find you and come up and visit with you and shake your hand and do that eyeball CUSO that you like to do so much. To close things out, Larry, my last final question for you in the last 3 minutes or so that we've got here is, how important is or has ham radio been to you over the years?
This is K0RGB. Well, thank you, Larry. I appreciate that. And again, thanks for all that, that you've done. K0RGB, back to net.
Been pretty active in a professional organization, too. I was going to try to rank this. And then for a while, I was extremely active in one of the local churches. Of the three items, I would say, overall, ham radio is more important than the others. And you could say, well, my gosh, the professional thing probably affected your work. Yeah, and of course, the church thing probably affected the religious side of your life. And I would say yes, but as far as getting to know folks, getting to mix with people I'd never seen before or talked to before, became a real big thing in my life, for sure. So I'd say ham radio has been incredibly important, and it's such a great... It is so great that those people that decide to take the time to study and get a license, there are so many facets of it. If you don't like to do the public service stuff like I like to do a lot, or you don't want to do the emergency preparedness stuff, as some do, really, or you don't particularly like to talk to DX stations, that is, stations around the world, there's other things that you can do, too. So there's no end to it. So, Brad, that's about all I can say, I guess, which is probably too much. Over.
Oh, no, not at all, Larry. You've been a wonderful guest. I appreciate you giving us an hour of your time this evening. I look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks at the Ham Bash. And, again, it was just good to kind of go back over some of the history and things like that. And I'm hoping... we'll be able to do the same with Chet next weekend. He'll be, or next week, excuse me, next Thursday at 7 o'clock Central Time. Chet, K0TCB, will be our guest, and we're going to do the same thing. We're going to talk about the Ham Bash. We're going to reminisce and talk about ham radio in Kansas City over the years. So, Larry, you got any final comments before we turn this back to normal operation?
Yes, I got one comment. I have a delightful guest visiting me this evening because she has no way to listen to Fusion, so she's listening to this. But she came up with a comment. Gosh, I can't think of his call sign. Ham radio is incredibly valuable to those that are shut in. I live in a retirement home here. There are no other hams here, which is kind of too bad, as a matter of fact. But we haven't yet been able to excite them enough to join in. But it's incredible what it can do for folks. And I'm trying like crazy right now to recall the call sign of one of the individuals who lives in a nursing home in Michigan. And he's bedridden, and he's got a rig set up on his table, and he talks all around the place. He's on HF also, which means he talks to distant stations too. And the big clock on the wall is dinging 8, so it's time for me to say goodbye, folks. Please listen to Brad. Yeah, look for me. There'll be some table around there, and there'll be an old guy sitting there with a yellow hat on. The yellow hat says Larry's List, W0AIB, founder and CEO. I'm the guy underneath that hat. Okay, folks? Good night, Brad.
Thank you again, Larry, and we'll definitely look for you, and I'll be look forward to visiting with you at the Ham Bash. So thanks again, ever so gracious to give us some of your time on this Thursday evening. Stay safe, my friend. 73s. That's going to end our special event for tonight. Again, we're going to do another one on next Thursday, 7 o'clock, and that guest will be Chet Halberg, KC0 TCB, and we're going to do the same thing. We're going to talk about the history of ham radio in Kansas City and maybe some of Chet's Elmers and things like that and just how things have changed over the year, and then I'm sure we'll have a lot of conversation about the stuff coming up on the Ham Bash on that following Saturday. So, again, thanks for joining us, and we're going to turn the room back over to normal operation. This is KB0 LSM. Good night.